Our next speaker is Marilyn Rosenthal. She is the mother of Josh Rosenthal, who was killed in the attack on the South Tower of the World Trade Center on September 11th. She's currently editing her book, 9/11, Searching for My Son and His Killers. Since her son's death, she has become an expert on warnings about and proceedings to 9/11 attack. She is Professor Emerita, Medical Sociologist and Adjunct Professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at the University of Michigan Medical School. She's also an Associate Director of the UM Medical School's Program in Society and Medicine. Welcome, Ms. Rosenthal.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share some of my research. After my son was killed and we somewhat recovered from the trauma and the shock, my first reaction as a social scientist was to find out as much as I could from as reliable sources as I could. And one of the subjects I was interested in, along with many other members of victims' families, is what information the White House could have had available to it before 9/11. So I'd like to summarize my findings here by telling you a little bit about the 10 different sources of information the White House could have had access to, that the president could have had on his desk in helping understand what was going on in the world. There are 15 United States government intelligence agencies. We've heard a lot about the CIA and the FBI, but there's many more than that, and I want to talk about one of them after I go through the list. We also have documented the information that the White House and various intelligence agencies received from foreign intelligence agencies in a period of time leading up to 9/11. In addition to that, there are the public declarations from Osama bin Laden. There were the transition briefings from the Clinton administration officials. There was information from America's foremost terrorism experts, George Tenet and Richard Clark. There was information that came through the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. There were unusual activities in the financial markets, and there were thousands of threat warnings in the summer of 2001. Here's a list of the various the 15 intelligence agencies that we pay our tax monies for, and we're going to just quickly go through that. And I'd like to just say a few words about the National Security Agency, during this, which monitors electronic messages and telephone calls. During the summer of 2001, the National Security Agency reported at least, that's supposed to be in red there. Mike, we're moving forward. Okay, the NSA reported at least 33 communications that they had intercepted and translated indicating a possible imminent terrorist attack in 2001. I am wondering if those 33 included the following two. Okay, on August 20th, 2001, Mohammed Atta sent a coded email message to Ramzi Ben El-Shib, the handler for the cell here, indicating the approximate time of the attack in 3 weeks and the four targets. That was a coded message, and I would presume our coding experts would have been able to figure out what that said. But a little easier to figure out was a telephone message from Atta to Ramzi on August 29th, 2001, indicating the date of the attack. And the code in that was so simple that my 12-year-old granddaughter could figure it out immediately, and it was 11/9, and that's a European way of writing a date, 9/11. That information is from a book called Masterminds of Terror, which was written by two British journalists and is based on interviews with Ramzi and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed before they were captured in Pakistan. In addition, we can look very quickly at the foreign sources of intelligence concerning imminent attacks. All my material, by the way, is from the public sector, and any of you with persistence can find all this. In the late summer of 2001, there were specific messages from Britain, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, the governments or intelligence agencies or heads of governments, and interestingly enough, from a secret Taliban emissary from Afghanistan. I don't know what to make of that. And warning of an imminent attack. There was additional intelligence information in the decade before, and particularly the year before, from all of those intelligence agencies. Then, when we turn to government reports, some of which have been mentioned here, there were 8 government reports between 1994 and the last one in 2001. The first one in 1994 was, for example, called Terrorism 2000, The Future Face of Terrorism. And, of course, the 2001 report was the Hart-Rudman report on counterterrorism. The majority of these reports, beginning with the 1994 report, indicate possible scenarios where terrorists would hijack airplanes and crash them into American landmarks. So if the president had wished, he could have had a good deal of information from those 8 reports. Then just let's look at statements from Osama bin Laden. Okay. Between 1993 and April 2001, Osama bin Laden gave 26 televised interviews with British and American and foreign correspondents in the Middle East. And he gave 26 televised interviews or made public statements that contained threat warnings. Between December 1992 and September 9, al-Qaeda carried out 9 bombings, assassinations, and attempted assassinations. Then, of course, I'm going to go over the material quite quickly concerning statements made by the Director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet. Let me just read a few of these. From 1995, quote, from 1995 to 9/11, we produced 46 papers I would call significant strategic intelligence analysis on bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and Islamic extremists. During 2000 and 2001, we pushed our analytic products, okay, into broader circulation. The leadership of the CIA repeatedly warned the policy community in the executive branch in Congress of the seriousness of the threat. And he went on to give some specific examples. You all know about the presidential briefing, and you may have missed an interesting quote from George Tenet at 8:50 on 9/11. He was having breakfast with former Senator Boren in the Sheraton Hotel. An aide informed him that the World Trade Center had been attacked, and Tenet's response was, "This has the fingerprints of bin Laden all over it." Okay. Then, of course, there's the second renowned American terrorism expert, Richard Clark. And these are quotes taken from his book. He talked about the difference between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration in terms of the priorities they gave to terrorism, their emphasis on terrorism. And there was also his January 25th, 2001 memo to Condoleezza Rice, which was only just released a short time ago, which contained explicit warnings. And he is quoted as saying, in the summer of 2001, the threat level exceeded anything George Tenet and I had ever seen, and it took until September 4th to get the principal's committee meeting on al-Qaeda that he had requested urgently in the January 25th memo. And I have to read aloud a statement that Richard Clark made on 60 Minutes on March 21st, 2004, because it expresses exactly how I feel. Frankly, quote, "Frankly, I find it outrageous that the president is running for re-election on the grounds that he is doing such great things about terrorism. He ignored it for months when maybe we could have done something to stop 9/11. Maybe. We'll never know." There was information that was available from the FAA. Security breaches at airports have been known and documented and reported on for decades. There's nothing new in that subject area. And it's already been stated that between April and September 10th, the FAA had received 52 separate intelligence reports specifically mentioning al-Qaeda threats to domestic airlines. They distributed 15 security flyers that included mention of Osama bin Laden hijacking and attacks in the United States. You've already heard the final quote. We also know that in the several months before 9/11, there were 30 cockpit intrusions on American commercial airlines. There's a lot to be said about that. And I see my time is running short, and I'm going to continue for a little bit more. There's been a lot of interest in what in activities in the financial markets, and all of you know about the unusual spikes in put orders in the options market on American and unusual airlines, unusual short sells on reinsurance companies that held insurance on buildings in the World Trade Center. There was also unusual purchases of treasury notes and unusual surges in currency flow. Now, one of the staff reports, which was published sometime after the 9/11 Commission report, did go into great detail on the SEC investigation of activities in the financial markets. And I am, the research is impressive and persuasive in terms of the activity that went on in the American market. And the evidence persuades me that it was not related to al-Qaeda. But there, and that was the point that the staff made, that there's no evidence that al-Qaeda was involved in any of the manipulations in the in American financial markets. However, there are questions that remain. The SEC examined 9.5 million transactions. That sounds like a lot until you calculate the number of transactions that go on in a week's period of time. So all we know is that they looked at transactions for the weeks before 9/11. So if I checked that out and included the weeks of August through September 9th, and that represents 17.6% of all the transactions. So we have to ask some questions about their methodology. Furthermore, they depended on the word of overseas sources, and they claimed they were unable to check that. They indicate difficulty in investigating offshore and shell companies. Nobody has explained why the president of the German National Bank, speaking publicly a number of times in the week after 9/11, why such a person would suggest insider training in, quote, airline insurance stocks and gold and oil futures. The staff reasoned that only al-Qaeda could have been the source of such insider training. I think we have to ask some questions about the possibility of other individuals who might have been hidden al-Qaeda supporters or others with access to this intelligence, particularly from overseas. And, of course, we just have to ask, how are our financial markets actually protected?
Ms. Rosenthal, I think that's
okay. Let me just show one more slide.
We have about one more minute, and then we're going to have to go to the questions.
Let's go to the categories and overall distributions of the threat warnings. With some graduate students helping me, we collected from what we considered to be responsible sources as many of the threat warnings as we could find on the web, in newspapers, from reliable books. And among the thousands of threat warnings we collected, we found 144 unique threat warnings, because there's a lot of repetition of these, and we were able to categorize these in a variety of ways, and you can see from the chart what we found. It turns out that 21% of the unique warnings, 21% of the unique warnings were about terrorists hijacking planes and crashing them into buildings and American landmarks. I am willing to make an assessment. I have a number of quotes from various individuals here that you have
Ms. Rosenthal.
But my final assessment is this. 9/11 could have been prevented. You can move forward to this mic. It's toward the end. 9/11 could have been prevented or at least contained. There was enough specificity in the pre-9/11 information to institute these security steps: harden cockpit doors and tighten airport security. Okay. And I thank you very much for indulging me.
All right. Thank you very much. And I just want to, yes, indeed.